We began our series on the dipping into the wisdom literature of ancient Israel with the book of Proverbs. Now we move to a second book, much later work, called Sirach. A man called Yeshua, which is Jesus, in fact, in English, Yeshua was the son of Eliezer and the grandson of a man called Sirach. And traditionally, he's known as Ben Sirach, the grandson of Sirach. He was a Jewish teacher living and working in Jerusalem. He studied the Torah, the prophets, and the other writings that were the sacred heritage of his people, and he spent his life communicating the fruits of his study to his Jewish students. At a time when Greek culture was influencing the whole region, including Judea, he wanted his students to appreciate the wisdom of their own traditions. In his teaching, he drew on these traditions, especially on the wisdom contained in the book of Proverbs, and applied it to the changing circumstances of the early 2nd century BC. His book predates the period of Antiochus Epiphanes IV and the Maccabean Revolt. In the 3rd century, Judea was controlled from Egypt. However, at the beginning of the 2nd century, Syria took control of Palestine, including Judea and Jerusalem. Ben Sirach grew up in the last decades of the 3rd century BC, when Judea was still controlled from Egypt. Many Jews were impressed by the Greek understanding of what it means to be human and by Greek ideas about how to live so as to experience a fulfilled life and contribute to building a better world. Ben Sirach was not blind to the merits of the dominant culture. However, he was convinced that true wisdom, that is to say, insight into the art of living, was found in Jerusalem, not in Egypt or Athens. He remained faithful to the conviction that his people were especially chosen by God, the Lord of creation and history, and who had revealed to them the Torah, the way of true wisdom. Ben Sirach knew Simeon II, who was high priest from 219 to 196 BC, and he gives him high praise in this book. He was determined to ensure that the young men were well schooled in their traditions and so able to choose wisely against the pressures of Hellenism when it went against their own Jewish ancient culture. Now, as well as such inspiring passages as chapter 24, which is a hymn to wisdom, and chapter 34, which is on divine providence, chapter 39 in praise of the Creator, and the beautiful concluding hymn, we can find many gems of wisdom from Ben Sirach, this remarkable teacher whose career in Jerusalem spanned the final decades of the 3rd century and continued into the early years of the 2nd century BC. There are times, but very few, where Christians reading this text can imagine Jesus saying, "It was said to you of old, but I say to you." One obvious example is chapter 12, verses 1 to 7, which we'll look at a later date, where the author assumes that God hates sinners, and he encourages his students to do the same. In other places, he speaks quite beautifully about forgiveness, but he doesn't extend it to one's enemies. He displays a special antipathy to the Samaritans. He encourages a caring attitude to those in need, but his attitude to women witnesses to the prevailing assumption of his day that women are inferior to men. There are two key limitations that Ben Sira inherited from the tradition. Firstly, he assumed that physical death was the end of life, the end of communion with God. 20 or so years after he was teaching, the people of Judea suffered intense persecution from Antiochus IV of Syria. It was this persecution that gave birth to the insight that divine justice requires that there be more to human life than what we experience this side of the grave. Communion with God must exist beyond death, not because of anything about ourselves, but because of God's fidelity to God's covenant. Not everyone embraced this idea, but at least the idea had struck root. It doesn't appear in these writings of Ben Sira. So that's one inherent limitation. Second one, Ben Sira, along with all the writers of the Old Testament, never questions the assumption that whatever happens is necessarily willed by God. If it's a pleasant happening, God is rewarding a person for goodness. If it's an unpleasant experience, God is punishing a person, correcting him for his sin. Turning to the idea of where he falls short of the kind of wisdom that we expect thanks to Jesus, I'll state again that he speaks of the importance of forgiveness. We'll find that in chapter 28. But he doesn't extend this to his enemies, and he remains locked in the prejudices of his contemporaries, especially in relation to the Samaritans. See that in chapter 50, verse 26. And secondly, he assumes that males are superior. There are no women mentioned in his long list of illustrious ancestors of his people, which goes from chapter 44 to 49. His teaching on marriage is only from the male perspective. The fact that he's teaching young males may go part of the way to explain this, but some of his remarks in regard to women are stunningly biased. We'll meet a particularly offensive statement in chapter 25, verse 19. Now, the book of Ben Sira does not appear in the Jewish canon of sacred writings. The assembly of rabbis at Jamnia, or Yavne, towards the end of the 1st century AD, judged that though it was composed in Hebrew, it was not sufficiently ancient to be included in the canon. However, the Greek translation, which we'll talk about briefly, made by Ben Sira's grandson in Egypt sometime after 117 BC, is included in the Greek Bible, and so was inherited by Christian Jews. In fact, Sirach was so popular among the Christians that it was given the Latin title Ecclesiasticus, the Book of the Church. The only 2nd century book that found its way into the Jewish canon was the Book of Daniel, and that seems to be because it does contain some ancient material and because of its prophetic style. the grandson of Ben Sira in Egypt translated his grandfather, that's Ben Sira's, class notes, really, and he translated them into Greek. And he begins with a foreword. And I'll read to you from the beginning. Many great teachings have been given to us through the law and the prophets and the other writings that followed them. And for these we should praise Israel for teaching and wisdom. I'll repeat that. Many great teachings have been given to us through, now he lists three categories, through the law, the prophets, and the other writings. Now, the author of the foreword is writing for Jews in the Hellenized cities of Egypt. However impressed they might be with Greek wisdom, he wants them to know that they have a wisdom superior to the Greeks, a teaching and a wisdom of which they can be proud. Teaching refers to the handing on of tradition from one generation to the next in the home, in the synagogue, and in the classroom. Wisdom covers all areas of know-how. We looked at this at the beginning of the book of Proverbs. It applies especially to the skill in the art of living a good life in relation to one's neighbour, one's world, and one's God. The author of the foreword, that is the grandson of Ben Sira, the author of the foreword wants his contemporaries to know the rich understanding of life that is offered in the Jewish scriptures and the value of the Torah to anyone who chooses to live as a faithful Jew. This is the first time, incidentally, that we find the Jewish scriptures divided into those three categories, the law, the prophets, and the writings. That is still the custom in Jewish circles. The Torah, the law, the Nevi'im, the prophets, and the Ketuvim, the writings, which accounts for the word Tanakh, which is their word for the Bible. T, Torah, N, Nevi'im, and K, Ketuvim. The foreword continues, verses 2 to 3, 2 to 4. Now, those who read the scriptures must not only themselves understand them, but must also, as lovers of learning, be able, through the spoken and written word, to help those who don't have them. So, continues the translator, my grandfather, Yeshua, Jesus, who had devoted himself for a long time to the study of the law and the prophets and the other writings of our ancestors, and had acquired considerable proficiency in them, was himself led to write something pertaining to instruction and wisdom. This he did so that by becoming familiar also with his book, those who love learning might make even greater progress in living according to the Torah. Well, that's my best effort at introducing this book of Sirach. Class notes from the beginning of the second century BC, but translated towards the end of that same century by Ben Sira's grandson into Greek. And now I'm going to read to you from the Greek version. Because the Hebrew was not part of the Jewish canon, it gradually fell into disuse. There are examples found in northern Egypt from the 10th, 11th centuries of a Hebrew text, so obviously in Egypt they were still interested enough in continuing the Hebrew text. But basically, It's the Greek text that spread and was copied and treasured, and it's only in the last 100 years that we've gradually discovered about 70% of the text of the original Hebrew. Some of it, we've only got the Greek. So let's begin now. Sirach, chapter 1, verses 1 to 10. It begins, "All wisdom is from Yahweh, and with him it remains forever. The sand of the sea, the drops of rain, the days of eternity, who can count them? Heaven's height, earth's breadth, the depth of the abyss, who can work this out? Wisdom was created before all things, and prudent understanding from eternity. The root of wisdom, to whom has it been revealed? Her subtleties, who knows them? There is but one, wise and greatly to be feared, seated upon his throne, the Lord. He it is who fashioned wisdom. He gazes upon her, he knows her measure. He's poured her out upon all he's made, upon every living thing, according to his bounty. He has lavished her upon those who love him." These introductory 10 verses are followed by a poem of 22 lines, divided into two equal parts, verses 11 to 21, chapter 1, and verses 22 to 30. The 22 lines represent the 22 letters of the Hebrew consonantal alphabet. It's a way of stating, we saw an example of this, in fact, in the book of Proverbs, it's a way of stating the all-encompassing nature of wisdom, from the A to Z of wisdom. And the key theme, which was also in the book of Proverbs, is the fear of Yahweh, that profound sense of the mysterious presence of the sacred at the heart of everything, of nature and people and events, and a profound longing and respect, wanting what God wants, wanting to conform our will to God, and delight, therefore, in the gift of the Torah, which shows us, brackets, us Jews, according to the author here, of course, shows us the way to live, far superior to anything that Greek wisdom could ever imagine. Verse 25, among wisdom's treasures are wise sayings. The Greek is parabole, parable. It's a title given to the book of Proverbs, the Mashal. The word wise saying covers a wide range of genre. Essentially, it's a saying that involves the use of metaphor or simile. It says one thing, inviting the reader to apply the truth to other situations. And we're going to find many examples of parabole, wise sayings, in the book of Sirach. Let me read to you Sirach chapter 2, verses 1 to 5. "My son," remember the class notes are for young men coming to the synagogue teaching, "my son, when you come to serve the Lord, prepare yourself for testing. Be sincere of heart and steadfast. Do not be impetuous in time of calamity. Cling to him, to the Lord. Do not forsake him, so that your future will be prosperous. Accept whatever befalls you, and in times of humiliation, be patient. For gold is tested in the fire, and those God favors in the crucible of humiliation. A short comment from me. If we sin, suffering is seen as punishment. If we're faithful, suffering is seen as a test. When affliction comes upon us, we must remain steadfast, accepting, patient. Above all, Ben Sira tells his students, we must keep our heart directed to God. We must cling to Him and not forsake Him. Then the text goes on, chapter 2, verses 6 to 9. Trust in Him and He will help you. Make your ways straight. Hope in Him. You who fear the Lord, wait for His mercy. The Greek is eleos. You might be familiar with the text in the liturgy, Kyrie eleison, Lord, have mercy. Well, here's the word here. You who fear the Lord, wait for His mercy. Do not stray or you will fall. You who fear the Lord, trust in Him and your reward will not be lost. You who fear the Lord, hope for good things, for lasting joy and mercy. The Greek word, eleos, translates a number of Hebrew words. One is Hanan, which means to show favor. When used of God, it refers to the many special ways in which God graces His people or an individual. So eleos contains this memory of what God has done for us. But another Hebrew word translated into eleos is the root rechem, from which is derived the noun rachamim, which speaks of God's tender compassion and is related to the word in Hebrew for a mother's womb. It's as though God holds us in His womb, bringing the whole world bursting into life, but also each one of us, and especially His people, nurtured by Him to be brought forth to the fullness of life. A third Hebrew word, which is translated often eleos, is chesed, a Hebrew word which speaks of God's fidelity to the covenant He's made to His people. Now these three qualities, Hanan, Rahamim, and Chesed, are qualities attributed to God in the creedal formula that recurs throughout the Bible. They're the key way of speaking of this mysterious God. God is one who shows His love in particular moments of our life. God is one whose tender compassion longs for us to live, and God is one who is faithful to the commitment that He has made. So back to our text in Sirach. You who fear the Lord, wait for His eleos. Wait for these qualities that I've just outlined. Chapter 2, verses 10 to 11 reads, consider the generations of old and understand. Has anyone trusted in the Lord and been disappointed? Has anyone persevered in the fear of the Lord and been forsaken? Has anyone called upon Him and been rebuffed? For the Lord is compassionate and merciful. He forgives sins and saves in time of distress. Merciful is eleos, of course. Compassionate in Greek, the Greek word used by Ben-Sira's grandson is oiktirmon. Oiktirmon. This is the only time it's used in this book, and in the New Testament it only occurs twice. And it has this particular focus on the rehem, on the womb, on the compassionate love that a mother has for the child in her womb. The Lord is compassionate and merciful. Commenting on these verses, I'm coming from the Psalms now. The psalmist pleads with Yahweh to remove the sphere of guilt from the sinner. He asks Yahweh to look away from sin, to cover over sin, to rub it out, to wash it away, to purge it away, to atone for it, to not remember it. This whole reality of sin where we stop welcoming grace. Grace is always offered, but we stop welcoming it. Well, how are we going to open up to welcome it? How are we going to be healed? And all these words are used throughout the Psalms, throughout the rich Hebrew text of the ancient Bible, where our author here says that this Lord forgives sins. Well, you can say he removes sin, he looks away from it, he covers it over, he rubs it out, he washes it away, he purges it, he atones for it, he doesn't remember it. All ways of talking about God's love that is bigger than our hearts and bigger than our sin. Back to our text, chapter 2, verses 12 to 18. Reads, "Woe to fearful hearts and slack hands, to the sinner who walks a double path." He probably has in mind someone who is a Jew. He's actually talking to Jews and writing for them, so Judaism would be one path, but the other is Hellenism. And he's critical of those who are compromising their Jewish wisdom and tradition and law, attracted as they are by the ways of the Greek world. Woe to the sinner who walks a double path. Woe to the faint-hearted who have no trust. They'll have no shelter. Woe to you who've lost hope. What will you do when Yahweh's reckoning comes? Those who fear Yahweh do not disobey his words. Those who love him keep his ways. Those who fear Yahweh seek to please him. Those who love him are filled with his law. Those who fear Yahweh prepare their hearts. Those who fear Yahweh and bow themselves down in his presence. Let us fall into the hands of Yahweh, not into the hands of human beings. For equal to his majesty is his mercy, and equal to his name are his works. And the name is the Merciful One. Chapter 3, verse 1 to 16, is about honouring one's parents. I'll let you read that for yourself. But I'll pick up here at chapter 3, verses 17 to 20. My son, carry out your tasks with gentleness. Then you'll be loved more than the one who gives gifts. The more you humble yourself, the greater you are, and you'll find favour in the sight of the Lord. Many are the lofty and the noble, but the Lord reveals his plan to the humble. For great is the might of the Lord, but by the humble he is glorified. The Lord, I'm translating from the Greek, is Kyrios, which is the Greek rendition of the Hebrew name Yahweh. So whenever you hear the Lord mentioned in this sacred text, you think of the God of Moses, the God, the Redeemer God, the God who takes his people out of slavery into freedom. As a comment on those verses, I'll read to you from Jesus' words in Matthew chapter 11, 25 to 29. Ben Sira has just said how God reveals his plan to the humble. Jesus says, "I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you've hidden these things from the wise and intelligent, and you've revealed them to mere infants. Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I'll give you rest. Learn from me. Take my yoke upon you, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your soul." Ben Sira, chapter 3, verse 21 to 24, writes, "Do not seek what is too sublime for you. Do not investigate what is beyond your power. Attend to what has been committed to you, for what is hidden is not your concern. Do not meddle in matters that are beyond you, for more than you can understand has been shown you. For long is the list of human speculations, evil and misleading fancies." A comment: Ben Sira is warning his students against the misleading speculations of the Greeks and the attraction of the knowledge of which they boast. For him, true wisdom, more than anything you can understand, has been revealed by God, and nowhere more fully than in the Jewish Torah. They should humble themselves before God. They should attend to what has been committed to them in God's revelation and humbly obey God's will. That, says Ben Sira, is the path of true wisdom. Chapter 3, verse 26, "Those whose hearts are hardened will be burdened by troubles." Those whose hearts are hardened will be burdened by troubles. And the last words of chapter 3, "A wise heart appreciates proverbs." These comparative, metaphoric statements that are containing wisdom, pointing to wisdom. "A wise heart appreciates proverbs. To the attentive ear, wisdom is a delight. As water extinguishes a blazing fire, so almsgiving atones for sin. The kindness you have done will cross your path as you journey. When you fall, you will find support." And now to complete the first part of the book of Sirach, chapter 4, verses 1 to 10. "My son, do not mock the life of the poor. Do not keep needy eyes waiting. Do not grieve the hungry or ignore the downtrodden. Do not add to the troubles of the oppressed or delay giving to the needy. Do not reject a suppliant in distress. Do not turn your face away from the poor. Do not avert your eye from the needy, and give no one reason to curse you. For if in bitterness of soul he should curse you, his Creator will hear his prayer. Endear yourself to the congregation. The Greek word is synagoge, hence our word synagogue, of course. So endear yourself to the synagogue. Bow your head low to the leaders. Later than the time of Ben Sira, the leaders will be called the Sanhedrin. We find them in the Gospels, of course. The leading group of high priestly family, the leaders of the community, the farm, the big landowners, and then the scribes. But here he speaks generally of the leaders. Give a hearing to the poor, return their greeting gently. Rescue those suffering injustice from their oppressors. Do not be hesitant in giving a verdict. Be a father to orphans. Be like a husband to their mother. You will then be like a son of the Most High, and he will love you more than does your own mother. Well, that concludes our first lecture. I hope you found much of that very inspiring, and it's not surprising that the early church loved reading this, giving advice to them about how they were to behave.